he sprang to his sleigh to give his team a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good morning, evening, afternoon, and night, everyone. It's Main Street Mekkies, the podcast where two hopeful Imagineers and real-life engineers talk about Disney engineering. I am your holiday host, Noah.
I feel like I am on like a Christmas-themed like shock jock radio show. Just the way that transition just flowed right in. That was beautiful. I am your other host, Alex, hopeful Imagineer, mega nerd, and Christmas fanatic, I'd say.
I'd say so, yeah, I think
our college dorm, definitely.
We probably went the hardest out of anyone on our floor, I would say so.
Yeah, just to bring the listeners in on this, Noah and I, as we said, we were roommates in college, and we both had a relatively large love for Christmas lights and Christmas decorations, and dorm rooms aren't known to be very warm, and so we decided we were going to warm up our dorm room and really decorate it up, so we did like a full light thing and had a Christmas tree, and it looked pretty good. And then we turned the Netflix Yule log on the TV, and
it was so cozy.
Oh, it was great. We had Michael Bublé playing in the background as is required, as is tradition.
And here we are, many years later, listening to Michael Bublé in the Discord before we started recording.
Yep. Well, so in case you hadn't guessed already, listeners, this week we are going to be kicking off kind of the holiday season. This should be hitting you guys right before Thanksgiving, just a couple days before. And I know for some people, Christmas doesn't start until Thanksgiving ends. But for the Disney parks, Christmas began the moment Halloween got shoved into a box.
November 1st, that's Christmas, baby. All right.
Like, not even joking, there were decorations up in World on November 1st. It's scary how quickly it flips. But
that's good engineering right there.
Yeah, it's the Disney way to start early, and so we're starting a little later than Disney, but I'm putting up Christmas lights this weekend with my dad, so
yeah.
I can't say too much on that front. And so we're going to be doing a special little episode. We're going to be doing another piece of Disney history. And we're going to cue that amazing theme music created by our very own Noah.
Come along for the ride. We hope you'll have a good time. It's a piece
of Disney
history.
Ho, 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 ho. Thank you. It will be holiday themed. So I tell my future self.
I am so excited.
I am too. I can't wait to hear what it sounds like.
But we are going to be doing a piece of Disney history on Disney Christmas.
Yay. And
it's hard to do, like I noticed while researching for this episode, it's kind of hard to do a piece of Disney history because very little of Disney Christmas is history anymore. Like, it is current. It is still going.
Still happens.
I was looking at the dates for like when these things started, and only like two of them have ended since then, like these huge traditions and stuff like that. But we're gonna it's crazy, like, but yeah, no, we're gonna go into that. I'm gonna kind of take lead on this episode and go nuts on it.
For your information, listeners, I have never been to a Disney park during a holiday season ever. I've almost went this year and then didn't, and so now, you know, I'm here to learn and absorb the great wisdom and experience that Alex has to offer. So let's sit back, relax, and enjoy a conversation about Disney Christmas through history. Where are we starting?
We're going to start actually, you know, at the beginning. We're starting right smack dab in going for Disney Christmas actually started kind of in this really weird way, and there's some kind of like rumors about it, like a lot of Disney history stuff that is debated whether or not it's fully true, but I'll tell you guys both of them. You guys can decide what story you actually want to believe. But so in 1955, Disney had always done like some like Christmas decorations and stuff like that, because the whole thing has always been it's the most magical place on Earth and it's the most magical time of the year. We say Christmas, and what we actually mean is the holidays. Our families grew up celebrating Christmas, but if you really think about like this time of year, there is countless just cultures and holidays that all have these huge celebrations around like the winter solstice and the ending point of winter, I think, or is it the height of winter?
It's the beginning of winter.
Oh, is it the beginning of winter? It's the end of the solstice. Yeah. And yeah. So that's determined by where you are in the world. But everybody has a lot of cultures have a holiday around this time of year. Mm-hmm. And so it was always kind of a special time for Disney. They put up decorations. They played music. But one of the biggest Disney Christmas traditions started low-key by chance. So in 1955, no, this is actually like a really cool story. So in 1955, when the, and this was the first year that the park opened, a group of 12 Dickens Christmas carolers from USC performed through the park. And this wasn't like I think it was just like this cool thing that they kind of put together.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit hard to tell whether or not it was like it was obviously planned, but it wasn't like a hey come down and see the carolers. It was just like hey there's some carolers around.
They just happened to be there.
Yeah. Well, I think they were invited, but like
oh okay.
Yeah, like it was Disney planned.
They didn't like advertise it or anything.
No, it was just something cool that was in the parks. But it ended up being so popular that they were then invited to come back, and then they performed on the Main Street Bandstand. Oh. And like central location, it's now that spot is now located to the Mongolia Park area by the Jungle Cruise. So I think it's a little bit into the hub, if I remember correctly.
I think so, yeah.
And so the carolers and chorus consisted of about 300 members, made up of visiting choirs and I think like some of the USC students and like a bunch of random people. They stood on Main Street singing and were accompanied by visiting school bands. And so this performance was so popular, Disney kept doing it year after year. In 1956, it was called the Christmas Bowl, in the same spot. And then eventually this became what's called the Candlelight Processional, which is a yearly Disney tradition that still goes on today. And I'm looking at a picture, and I will make sure to post this, of they're standing in front, I believe it's the front of the park where like the topiary is when you walk in, right in front of the train station, and it is a ton of carolers singing to the people out in front of the park.
That's awesome.
And like huge crowds of people like come just to see this.
Yeah.
And so this like weird like thing that the like was started with a group of 12 USC carolers ended up turning into about 300 later that same year. And then the next year they brought it back because people loved it so much. Like next year it was like they had their own sign. It was like official, like an official docket. Ooh. On the Disney thing.
Yeah.
And then in 1957, they followed the Christmas Around the World parade. That went until 64, which was then replaced by Fantasy on Parade until 76. And then it's hard to find the date that like fully switched over to what it is today. Cause I think they, like some years they did both. So at some point it switched over to the Candlelight Processional, but then they were also doing parades. So I can't tell which year it like fully switched over to just the processional.
Right.
But now that's what they do in Disneyland. They still do it to this day. And that then moved over into Disney World. Like, it moved over because when they started in Disney World, they had their Christmas time very shortly after they opened. And then when it came about, they didn't have a candlelight processional. And people were, like, they were so bummed out. And so I believe the following year, so they weren't able to put one together that year, but the following year they brought the candlelight processional over to Disney, and they did it still in Main Street. But then once Epcot opened, they moved it over to Epcot.
Oh, yeah.
And in Epcot, in the American Pavilion, there is actually a stage that is exclusively, its main purpose is to house the candlelight processional. And that stage is there year round. It is set apart from the main walkway. It's the only thing I believe in, like, the entirety of the World Showcase that is a building or, like, attraction located on your right. If you're walking around clockwise, is like the only attraction that's located on your right, other than like restaurants. But it's like out of the water. It's fully out on the water. It's fully in the walkway.
So that performance area is like exclusively for the candlelight processional.
Yeah, and let me tell you, it is 100% worth the watch. So my family, just for reference, we were lucky enough to be able to go to Disney twice during Christmas, I believe. Oh. I came either twice or three times. It was during Christmas, and was there on Christmas Day, which was super cool. And so we did like the whole shebang, all like the holiday traditions, and we saw the candlelight processional. And it's one of those things where I was so little that I don't think I, like, fully understood how cool it was. But, like, looking back on it, it's the coolest thing ever. And I want to go see it again so bad with, like, new, fresh eyes and a different worldview.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm looking at pictures of, like, the stage and what it looks like when they did. That's so cool. That's amazing that all of this, like, a full-fledged production started with just, you know, Disney inviting a couple of carolers to the park from USC, just a couple of choir nerds that wanted to sing extra.
Yeah, literally just 12 people. 12 Jeez. People were in the park caroling, and people were crowding them. Like, it was so popular. People found it so cool to have, like, carolers walking down Main Street. And so they upgraded the production that same year and then just kept bringing it back. And you can still bigger. Go. Yeah.
So they're still doing it in Disneyland too, right?
Yeah, I believe so. As long as I've read that right.
And it's still the processional in Disneyland. Is it? Do they do it on a stage in Disneyland also, or is it like a
kind of thing? No, I believe now what they do here. I'm gonna send you a picture, listeners. I will try to remember to put this on the five for Friday this week,
and I will describe it for you, listeners. Don't you worry.
So I'm sending you a picture of this right now, where they're at, and I think you'll be able to verify that. I'm pretty sure I'm right on the location, but listeners, if you're kind of visualizing it in your head, I believe it is before you enter into Magic Kingdom. It's either before or it's right after, and people turn around. I can't tell which one it is. I believe
that this is right after.
Okay.
So it's like on the back side of the train station.
Okay, that would make more sense.
Or not the hub, but facing in, like facing down Main Street. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So pretty much it is like a group of carolers holding candles, pointed down towards Main Street with the crowds in front of them. So think of like on they're staring at the flagpole right now, standing like up into a stage that's like located off of the train. The train station.
Amazing. And also, listeners, if you haven't seen this, you know, you look for the post and you'll see it there. But the singers are in the form of a Christmas tree while they're singing, like up on stage. They're in the shape of a Christmas tree and they're all wearing green. That sounds really dumb when I say it out loud, but it looks great. I can't believe I've never even heard of this.
Yeah, it's one of those things where there's so much that Disney does during the holidays that it's hard to remember, like, all of the little things that's there.
Yeah.
And
I feel like the holidays, that's where Disney has the most kind of celebrations or events or things that, like, obviously the most of them that have stuck around for the longest, but also they seem to be more kind of cult favorite kind of niche events that started from a very specific thing happening, and then everyone just loved it. Like, this doesn't feel like, and granted, I'm just looking at a picture, but this doesn't seem like, at least in Disneyland, the kind of event that you would expect Disney to put on nowadays if they were like, we're putting on a Christmas spectacular. Like, you'd probably expect them to do a parade or a fireworks show or something like that. But this is literally just a bunch of singers gathered around the entrance of Main Street with Christmas lights all around them and just singing Christmas songs. Like, that's very wholesome in the grand scheme of what Disney does for entertainment now.
It really is. I feel like holiday music is kind of one of those things that always fills people with a lot of joy.
Yeah.
And Disney music is that too. Like, the connection to music that both Disney and the holidays holds. And from what I've been able to tell, like, just knowing people in college who celebrated like Hanukkah and Kwanzaa, for them it might not be a Michael Bublé song, but like, music during the holidays is still super important. And I don't know, it's something that brings everybody together. And I think like, it is. It's very like wholesome to have that experience in the Disney park.
You chose an excellent first example, because I spent like all of my high school years in choir and then two of my college years in choirs. And so seeing this is something I would definitely enjoy. And you're totally right that, like, yes, when you say the holidays, you're referring to both, you know, the actual holidays that are happening, but at least in the Northern Hemisphere, you're also referring to like colder weather, but that also means, you know, cozier clothes, you know, fireside movies, hot cocoa. It's just, you know, the other side of this that isn't the actual holidays themselves is kind of a sense of togetherness and, you know, being around loved ones. It's when you come home and visit family for the holidays, you have Thanksgiving and your December holidays of experience. Like, this is, Disney captured that really well in this event, because I don't know, I'm probably biased, but a choir or just a group of carolers singing is such a good example of unity in performance, because you've got all those people doing the same thing, singing together, and then you've got all the people in the crowd just observing and enjoying the ambiance. It's chef's kiss already, right off the bat. And it's been going on since what, when they opened?
It was the year that Disney opened. Year that Disneyland opened. And there's, so the story that I mentioned earlier that's like people kind of like him and ha over whether or not it's real is apparently, and I'm looking for the quote in this article that I referenced. Can't find it. So apparently, Walt Disney looked at one of his like higher ups and said, "Man, wouldn't it be great if we could like have carolers coming down here and singing to the people and stuff like that?" So like, there's some people that like credit it to like he specifically brought them in or like brought it out on a whim. And so I think like that's the big debate, is whether or not this was like a planned thing that they always wanted to do during Christmas, or if this was like just a random thing that Walt came up with that he then wanted people to come in.
Right.
And so that's kind of debated. There's no way to know if that was true.
Yeah.
even if you, I think the guy that he was talking to has passed now, but even if you ask him, he's like, "I don't know, Walt said a lot of things to me randomly."
Yeah.
It could have been.
It definitely seems like something Walt would have wanted, because it's a very like, you know, classical American holiday ideal with like the carolers and him wanting Main Street to very much feel like, you know, an American downtown. But I like that. That's debated over.
I wonder if
USC has any records of like correspondence with Disney back when that first started.
That would be interesting. I'd love to know that too. That would be super interesting.
I'm sure their music department brags about it all the time.
Oh yeah.
I would if I were them. Yeah.
Yeah. Started the candlelight processional.
Yeah. You're welcome.
but so that's not the only tradition we're talking about today though. We're going to focus mainly on Disney World. And for all the Disneyland fans, I'm not throwing down on your traditions. I'm going to talk about a couple right now. You guys do an awesome thing, the Festival of Holidays, which is done, I believe, in California Adventure, which is super cool. Mm-hmm. Just a bunch of, like, pays tributes to a bunch of multicultural and diverse music, cuisine, traditions, just Christmas, or not Christmas, holiday traditions around the world. And then you got, there's also a holiday traditions for, like, Mexico and Brazil that's Ooh. Done. Which is super cool. Yeah. And then, in case you've never seen it, no, I'm going to post a picture to you, listeners. You should definitely look this up. Cars Land during Christmas is decorated amazingly. They do tire wreaths, and the view down the lane is...
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. It's breathtaking.
It's... I thought I knew Wow. I'm...
Yeah, no one decorates like Disney decorates.
As if Cars Land couldn't look any better. Oh man, the tire wreaths and the lights everywhere, and the leaning tower of tires is all decked out. Oh,
yeah, no one decorates lights like Disney decorates light, and I think that it's technically not like a Disney event or Disney tradition, but just seeing the parks decorated is in itself. My favorite part of Disney at Christmas. It is the most magical place. The lights are going, the Christmas trees are up, everything's like Christmas decorated or holiday decorated. Like it's so, and I apologize I keep saying Christmas, but that's the holiday I grew up with, so it's the one my brain defaults to, but it is just so cool to see that just decorated and putting up the holiday lights and all that kind of stuff. But we're going to focus on Disney World because a lot of the holidays that are represented in Disneyland are also represented in Disney World just on a larger scale, literally just due to the fact that they have more room.
They literally are on a larger scale there, so that makes sense.
For example, we're going to talk about Epcot. Epcot has a International Festival of the Holidays. And so I actually got to see this when I was a kid. It's been going on for a while. And I think I actually have a date for this. Yeah. 1996, so 2 years before you and I were born, Noah, Epcot started doing the Holidays Around the World, which is now the International Festival of Holidays.
Uh-huh.
And pretty much what this is every country in the World Showcase has a person that is kind of representing their... the cultural traditions that they do during the holidays. And so in Norway, I believe they... Shoot, I'm blanking on the tradition in Norway. The one I remember vividly is in Germany, there is apparently something... It's like a Christmas pickle or something like that. It's like an ornament that they put in the trees. And you've heard of this. Do you remember what... It's like you get something if you find it.
Well, so I don't know the actual... German tradition. We did this in my house growing up. We had like a little pickle ornament, and then the night before, one of our parents, I think, would hide it somewhere on the tree so that on Christmas morning, I think it was whoever found the pickle first on the tree, you either got to like open a present first, or you got like good luck for the rest of the year. Or
that must have been. That sounds familiar, so I think it was it. We talked with an exchange student from Germany that was working at the pavilion, and cool. they were saying how they like their family does this every year, and it's like a super common thing to do in Germany.
Yeah,
I didn't comes know that from was like German an old tradition. That as long as Disney was not throwing stuff out, then
I'd believe it.
Yeah. So, but if we do have German listeners. You guys do this, listeners, who knows, if you or your family does this and you're one of our listeners from Germany, send us a message. We'd love to hear, like, if we got anything wrong, like, please correct us. But so they do this for every country around the world. They do, like, a large tradition, that's done during the holidays. I believe in China, a couple years, it was, like, talking about, like, the, now I'm blanking on all the traditions. It's either food traditions or a lot of just really neat things. Because I don't believe the Chinese New Year does not happen around the holiday times, right?
Right, that's like end of January.
Yeah, that's a lot earlier. But I can't remember if they also, because the holiday season goes into into January for a little bit. So I think like 1 year they did talk about the Chinese New Year in the China Pavilion.
Okay. That makes sense.
Because I think there's like a couple holidays leading up to it, if I remembered correctly. But I could totally be wrong. But anyway, so that's like Epcot's big thing. And then they also have the Candlelight Processional. Magic Kingdom has a few. Usually they do some fireworks. I believe they used to have the Candlelight Processional, but then it moved over to Epcot. Right. They do like a big like Disney After Hours thing. Where like when we were going, Magic Kingdom was open till like 2 in the morning. And it was a Christmas After Hours special where they did fireworks late at night. And there was like people serving you hot chocolate and
Did you have to buy tickets to it?
It was a separate ticket, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a, I think they still do it. Right. I think it's now called like Disney, yeah, I'm looking at it now, Disney Very Merriest After Hours.
Okay, that sounds right.
Yeah, and so there's themed fireworks, tasty treats, special event character sightings, and all the rides are open, so super cool. And then they do like special projections on the castle, which are super neat to see. They put lights on the castle, which look amazing, like it looks like crystal. And then obviously like all the goodies and stuff like that. But as far as like my favorite one, and this one is actually not there anymore.
Ooh.
Surprisingly, it was in Hollywood Studios. Now, I want to take y'all back in time. This was back when it, I believe, was still called MGM.
MGM, ooh, back the olden days.
Oh, yeah, back before Galaxy's Edge, before Mickey and Minnie's. Great Movie Ride was before still
Disney
there.
Disney and Marvel were synonymous.
Oh, yeah, no, this was all before that. There was an event every year called the Osborne Festival of Lights.
Oh, okay.
Osborne Family Spectacle of Dancing Lights.
Continue, yes.
And so on the Streets of America in Hollywood Studios, so I believe it was, it spanned both then, because I'm looking, its last date was 2016, and it was Hollywood Studios by then.
Okay.
A family had started the way that I kind of understand it, so they had their own like family business, and then in 1986 the daughter, who was named Allison Brian Osborne, nicknamed Breezy, asked their dad if they could decorate their home in lights, and they totally did it, stringing about 1,000 lights around their home. Every year it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually he had purchased 2 properties adjacent to his home.
Oh my God.
And they decorated all of them. By 1993, they had over 3 million lights. It literally, so they had an illuminated globe, they had 2 rotating carousels of lights, a 70-foot tall Christmas tree with 80,000 lights in 3 colored layers, and then a canopy of 30,000 red lights that went over a section of the driveway.
That's like dadding on a whole nother level. That's dedication.
Oh yeah,
to the
it's crazy.
Oh my!
But
God.
In 1993, they got sued by their neighbors because it was lit for 35 days from sunset to midnight every day.
I can see why they'd get annoyed at that.
Yeah, because it would cause traffic congestion. Emergency vehicles were having trouble getting down the streets.
Oh, no.
And in response, the family added 3 million more lights.
just fight fire with fire. Okay, more lights.
So the court eventually ordered them to reduce it down to 15 days and reduce the time. And then in 1994, I think it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and then in 1995, the Supreme Court just shut down the display.
Oh my god.
They continue wow. to have it, but just a little bit smaller scale until the 2000s, when then I believe Disney bought it shortly after.
Disney just said, we love your lights, we'd like to just buy them.
They bought the whole thing. Yeah, they bought the whole display. Gosh. And so wow. in 2007, I believe was the first year that they started. Oh, no, in 1995 was the first year that they did their partnership. So 1995, the display was set up in the residential street as the Osborne Spectacle of Lights and instantly was like a beloved attraction.
I bet, yeah.
And so by trying to find like their last stat. Okay, so the canopy, by the time that it ended, had over 21,600 pixels, and could do over 16 million colors. They eventually started incorporating like Frozen stuff into it.
Nice.
And then on top of that, when they set up the lights, they kind of like I believe they like worked with the family, and then started putting hidden Mickeys into the light shows themselves. And on top of that, they would send the bubbles down onto the crowd that would look like snow, like the fake snow, and play like Christmas songs as you were looking. And so I got to go to this before it closed down. So like, 2016,
Oh man, so you remember it too?
Yes, yeah. 2016 was the last year that they did it, and so there was a final performance and. The final performance was January 6, 2016, ending to Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and finalizing with the Mickey Mouse Club alma mater.
Nice.
And so what they would do, and this was honestly like the coolest thing, because Dad and I were crazy into Christmas lights and crazy into decorating the houses.
Right.
And I think since I was like... I honestly think since I've been like 7 years old, we have decorated the house every year, including when I was in college, including up until last year because of COVID was the first year that we have missed since I was seven. This year he's coming over to help decorate our place.
Yeah.
But so we're sitting there and it's completely dark before the show starts. They don't have any of the lights at all. And then they kind of begin like the countdown and start playing the music. And then the lights come up and they start dancing and play the music and the tree lights up and all this stuff goes on. And then literally the entirety of it is you can get like hot chocolate at some hot chocolate stands. There are like some little food stands and stuff like that. But you're just walking around looking at the lights while the music plays. And it was the coolest thing ever. They started pumping in the snow and... There was just so much to look at. It was insane. It was the coolest thing ever. It was heartbreaking when we found out that they weren't going to be doing it again. But I think it just became, it was a spectacle. It was a spectacle of lights and the lights moved. They danced to the music. And so you're not just throwing up Christmas lights and turning them on. You're putting in relays. You're adding in like, relatively sophisticated coding to
it's like
pair
yeah,
together
like those houses people do with like you know fully choreographed light displays to music and like talking trees and like screen displays like that caliber of lighting.
Well yeah, but think about it this way. Before Disney acquired them, which they acquired the lights in 1995, the light show was up to 6 million lights.
That's insane.
You're tying those together. You're tying all those together. And these are lights that were bought in like the 60s, 60s, 70s, 80s. No, sorry, 80s. They were bought in the 80s all the way into the 90s. These weren't the lights we have today where they can be controlled by an app on your phone. These were the old, like you plug
this
those
is like
suckers
old
in.
Old school, relay controlled, probably all incandescent lights at that point. Oh my god. Well, okay, so I have a couple questions. I know I could probably just look up pictures of this, but you experienced it.
Oh, I got you.
When it was just at the Osborne property and not acquired by Disney, I'm assuming a lot of the displays were not... Wait, let's see. What's this picture? Oh my god.
Yep.
Jeez.
Yep, that's the canopy too. That's the same red canopy.
So, but this is it in... Hollywood Studios.
This is in Hollywood Studios. That is their tree, oh though, I believe. The Osborne God. Tree.
Well, sorry, listeners. I'm just... like, every single surface is covered in lights.
Yeah.
And yeah, not just haphazardly thrown on, like the molding on the outside of the buildings is a different color than, like, the pillars are, and their handrails are a different color. It's... the planning that had to go into this, and also, like, I wonder what the power consumption of the
display. Oh my god, that probably was the main reason that they stopped doing it,
especially before they switched over to LEDs. Like, you got to think, when Disney acquired it and when the technology was a little more advanced, they probably switched over to LEDs where they could, but like,
you can't get rid... Yeah, you can't just replace 3 million or 6 million lights, but...
Where were the Osbournes drawing all of that power from? Like, their power bill had to be insane.
Well, they founded a medical testing center. Like, they found the Arkansas Research Medical Testing Center in Little Rock, Arkansas. So that's where they got their power consumption. But just remember, listeners, in the 80s and 90s, we didn't care about energy consumption.
No.
That was
energy
not a thing.
Was limitless and free.
Yes, it was. And so these bulbs probably increased the temperature of the surrounding area by like a substantial amount. But
like standing...
listeners, just to give you like a visual, if you can visualize what like the streets of America and Hollywood Studios look like, which it's relatively near Muppet Vision. It's kind of like that street that looks like a old-timey New York street, and there's like a big it's not cardboard, but it's like a big scene at the end of it that makes it kind of look like it has perspective. That's the street we're talking about. Every square inch of all of the buildings is covered in lights, and there are things on top, and there's a canopy going over it, and wreaths and trees and rotating carousels of light.
It's insane.
And like moving fixtures, those little people that you see on the side literally moved, like they waved and danced to the lights.
Well, so when it got moved into Disney, and I'm guessing when it moved into Disney, did Disney add some like Disney IP characters
to
the displays? And I'm guessing those weren't there before when it was just at the Osborne property.
I don't think so.
So probably when they did it, Disney Imagineering, I would guess, got involved and were like, all right, we're gonna add all these characters to this show. And so when you saw it, there were a whole bunch of, or not a whole bunch, but there were Disney characters in the displays, right?
Yeah, no, there was Disney characters in the display, and like they had added stuff in. And so like I'm looking kind of like on the article about it, and they added in, so they augmented its current size of over 5 million lights. So it was over 5 million, so I guess they didn't get all of the 6. At least basing on my math of when it start, like, at some, they had, by 1993, they had 3 million lights, and then in 1994, they got sued and added 3 million more. So they must have not gotten all of them.
What a power move.
Wow. But so the size when it ended was over 5 million lights, and then they add in like Disney IPs and hidden Mickeys, and the 2007 edition had over 40 of the Disney Disney icons.
Oh my gosh, that's insane. And this is another example of like what an odd and niche thing that Disney just embraced, and of course people loved it because it's quirky and it's unique and it's very just, you know, come out and see all the lights with your family. There's no crazy screens or crazy shows and effects. It's just a whole lot of lights done by people who really, really love doing this.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, I found a way to make myself relevant in this discussion beyond the point of just being an audience member. I have in front of me several fun facts about holidays in Disney World that center around numbers of things that are in the parks.
All right, hit me.
So, I think this is from 2020 or 2019. So we just talked about how many lights were in the Osborne display, peaking at around 5 million, right?
A little over 5 million.
A little over 5 million. How many lights do you think light up Disney World for the holidays total?
I'm going to go with
specifically 30, for the holidays.
I'm going to go with 30 million.
This is just saying 8.5 million.
There's no way.
By Disney World, they're just talking about Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
But that I would not believe. But this sounds like a much more believable fact. How many decorated trees do you think there are in the Disney World parks? Not necessarily the hotels and everything. Just
in
the park.
If you try to do the hotels, I'm gonna say 60. I'm so low, aren't I?
You're so low. 1,300.
No. They can't count the little 1,300 shrubs.
Decorated trees throughout the property.
What?
So I'm guessing that
includes,
like,
has to count the resorts.
Like the trees that are just lining the walkways that are decorated, and then, like, the specifically put up Christmas trees.
Oh, my God, that's crazy.
That's a wild one. This one I won't make you guess because it's ridiculous, but this is saying it takes 150 semi-truck trailers full of decorations to decorate all the resorts, parks, and on-site Disney locations.
And think about this, too. They usually do that in a day or two.
Yeah. Have you seen, listeners, you might have heard of this, too, and I don't know if you've seen this, Alex. There's, like, a special that Disney released in 2019, I think. That's just all about decorating the parks overnight.
Yeah, I haven't
seen
it, but I know about it.
It's ridiculous. They spend months prepping for this so that everything goes right, because you have to get, like, cranes and trucks and cast members and, you know, overseers for construction all in, like, 1 to 2 nights. Usually they try and get, like, everything they can in one night, and then the following night they'll try and get anything that's left over, but it's, like, you have one night to basically turn it from probably Halloween theming into holiday theming.
Yeah,
and they do it.
You gotta take stuff down and put stuff up, and you gotta snag all of the stuff that people are gonna notice first, like all of the Christmas trees.
Yeah, all of those Christmas
all
trees.
All 1,300 Christmas
1,300.
Trees.
1,300. Yeah, next time you're there, you can count them, listener.
Yeah. If you do, tell us. I do have one last fact about the Osborne lights.
Ooh,
and this is what we'll end with before we go to Timekeeper's Holiday. But
okay,
so the Osborne lights, when Disney initially made the offer, he thought that Disney wanted to put it on another residential street in Orlando, but what they actually offered was to put it on a quote unquote residential street backlot section in Disney Hollywood Studios. Yeah. And he didn't realize that initially. And apparently he was a big fan of Hollywood Studios, Osborne was, and instantly accepted the offer the moment that they said that. Yeah, because it was, I believe the name of, now it's called Streets of America, it used to just be called Residential Street, maybe the street itself is called Residential Street, but that's where it was going up. So he thought that they were going to put it on literally
on
a residential
street
in Orlando that they probably owned, and is like, no, we're putting it in the park.
And he was like, oh, absolutely. Where do I sign? Here,
yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah, no, literally.
I thought you were going to say he, like, was going to put up a fight and be like, this has to be in a neighborhood or something. That's way better that he's just a Hollywood Studios nut.
No, he was skeptical to have it in a neighborhood. And then he was like, oh, you're putting it in Hollywood Studios? Yeah, man. Yeah, do it. Take the light.
Just put it up. That's probably good that he was skeptical about putting it in a neighborhood. It probably would have been worse in a neighborhood and more obnoxious than it was in his, you know, multiple property section that originally had it in.
Oh, yeah. But unfortunately, I think that's the last holiday tradition that we're going to have to talk about, but just to throw in a couple blurbs, or honestly, just one last one.
Speed round.
If you're in Disney World during the holiday season, take a trip over to the Grand Floridian Resort. I don't care if you're staying there or not. The Grand Floridian Resort has done a giant gingerbread house inside the resort. So the Grand Floridian Resort has had a giant gingerbread house made every year since 1998. They make a giant gingerbread house that is fully edible, and they sell pieces of the gingerbread with some of the frosting that they make. But it's super ornate, super cool to look at. And then you can get a piece of gingerbread. And the Grand Floridian is, in itself, absolutely beautiful. But just that during the Christmas time, it's super cool to go look at. So if you have an extra bit of time, go take a look over that. It's totally worth it. That will be my last one, because we got to do a Timekeeper's Holiday before we run completely out of time.
Holiday edition.
Timekeeper's Holiday Holiday.
Holiday edition. Cue another theme song I'm telling myself I'm going to make.
Well, yeah, but you have it. I like it to begin with, but if you're going to try to...
I'll probably just add jingle bells in the background.
Honestly, that's a good way to do it. But I'm going to let you, or do you want me to go first, or do you want you to go first?
Well, I'll explain what we're going to do, and then you can go first, and then I will wrap things up. So, if you have not heard our first piece of Disney history, which was on Epcot, you should go listen to that. But instead of doing Mouse Geared at the end of these episodes, we do a little segment called Timekeeper's Holiday, which is in reference to an attraction that was just called The Timekeeper. So, this was an attraction that used to be in Magic Kingdom, featuring an animatronic host called the Timekeeper, who was voiced by Robin Williams, and he would take you on a journey traveling through time. So this is an homage to that attraction. But we're going to take what we just talked about, holidays throughout history at Disney, and we will each say at what point in history we would go back to experience which thing we talked about. So like, what was your favorite thing from the history of that thing? What a horrible explanation, but
what it was like. If you could go back in time and have a day during one of these which like an example, that could be like go into the first Disney day with those 12 Dickens carolers, or seeing the first full candlelight procession. I think based on my enthusiasm, you know where I'm going.
I think I have a good idea.
I would give anything to go with with my dad, and I guess this is a fun spot to announce this as well. My wife is pregnant, and no one knew this, but we haven't really talked about it.
What? I didn't know that. Well, yay!
But so like these kind of traditions with my dad are something that we've always talked about doing when I end up having kids, and the Christmas lights and everything. And I would give anything to take my future kids someday down the line and my dad and go down and see the Osborne lights again. I truly would. And I'm laughing because I'm low-key getting a bit emotional right now.
I can hear it. Yeah.
I would give anything to just have like 15 minutes. I don't even need the full day. Just 15 minutes where we could walk down that lane again would be incredible.
Very, very onward of you. I rewatched the scene at the very end when the dad actually shows up, and I was like, oh no, I have to go back to work. It's lunchtime. Oh no. That's a good one.
I would do anything for that 15 minutes. Honestly, that would be so, so amazing.
And that's, there it is again, like something about these holiday traditions just reeks of family bonding.
Yeah.
And it's like you can bond with family, you know, any time of the year, but it seems like it's just easier and everyone has such a great time in general when you're doing holiday related things. And Christmas lights are, that's like that. that raw, you know, ancient urge that we have to just like stop and stare at pretty things. I feel like Christmas lights tap into that just gut reaction to just stop and be like, wow, that's pretty.
Yeah.
And especially when you have the Osborne lights, it's like, you know, scaled up by 100, just being surrounded by lights like that. So well chosen. I think you that would be amazing.
What you got?
I don't know. It's tough because I love like all the things we talked about, and the holiday season is my favorite time of year despite, you know, shorter days and whatever. But like, I've been listening to Christmas music since probably the mid-September. Just sometimes if it's cold enough in the morning and I'm driving to work and it's dark out, I'll be like, I could convince myself this is a December morning. Okay. And then I'd play Christmas music because it's cold and dark. This was before daylight savings. So it was like pitch black in the morning until like 8. But I would honestly, I'd want to spend a day in Disneyland maybe a few years after it opened to see the processional or the caroling. When did it become the processional? Do you have a date for that?
That's the hard part. It's okay. A little bit hard to narrow down the date. It became the processional sometime, for the listeners hearing all my clicking, I have like 18 articles open up right now. So at some point between, I think it was like 61 and 71. Okay, so by 1959 it was the processional, and Disney opened in 55, so I think by 59 they had narrowed it down as the processional.
Okay, and before that it was just caroling.
It was the Christmas
bowl.
It was just caroling. And then the next year it became the Christmas Bowl, which is a weird name, but
yeah, that is a weird name. It sounds like a football game, but okay. Yeah. I would want to go and spend a day in Disneyland, like maybe the year after it officially switched over to the processional, because I'm assuming like at that time they actually treated it like they would proceed throughout Disneyland and end up at a stage and then do a performance, I'm guessing.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah, no, it's pretty much like it started at a time, you got your stuff, you found your spot. It was like the fireworks shows.
Yeah, okay. So I would want to go back and experience that, because I think some of my favorite, not even shows, just things to see in the Disney parks are the kind of things where it's just a person or a group going by performing. So like in California Adventure, there's like the streetcar band and they're playing like jazz and singing old timey music and whatever and driving through Buena Vista Street. I love that. Because it feels less like a choreographed and staged show and more like this is just happening and this is part of the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So getting to experience that and be surrounded by holiday decorations would be really cool, because a thing that my high school choir did was every year at first it felt like we were being forced to, but we would walk through the halls of the high school and sing O Come Emmanuel. And we'd have little bells that everyone would fight over, but but it ended up being, because we'd finish up the semester, I guess, by doing like a full concert at a church in town or something, and that was always my favorite performance because it was the holiday season and all of the music was so fun, and like spending all of the time getting ready for that with friends was some of the best bonding that I ever did with the friends I made in that class and the people I knew in high school. So I personally really enjoy just seeing caroling and processions happening. So I would love to see that. And plus, it'd be like 1960s Disneyland, which is a beast on its own.
Oh, yeah. That I get to experience. I got a date suggestion for you, because I just found this little fact while looking through the article again.
All right.
December 22nd, 1959. Was the largest choir to ever perform the professional, with a choir consisting of 2,574 singers.
In Magic, in where?
in Disneyland. As far as I can tell.
Too many people for Disneyland. Disneyland is small. That's so many people.
But that's the largest. They moved the professional to Epcot in 1993. That's when, in 1971 was when the processional began performances in Main Street, and then 1993 is when they did it in Epcot. So that was, there, 1959 was Disneyland Main Street.
I feel like I'd rather pick a day when it was smaller. That's so many people. Oh,
I don't know, but this is your perfect day. You could get a front row spot and just experience that many voices singing Christmas songs.
What was the date for that?
December 22nd, 1959. You looking up a picture?
Are there pictures? Have you found any?
I don't know. I literally just found this. I like that day though. I like your pick of doing it just a little bit after.
Oh boy, there's a picture.
Oh, drop that in the Discord. That will be going on the five for Friday.
Oh my gosh, we're gonna include this. So for all these pictures that we're talking about,
I promise these are all going on the five for Fridays. I promise you these are all going on the five for Fridays.
This is a picture. From the hub in Disneyland, looking down Main Street towards the entrance, and the entire street is packed with people.
That's like, not 1959, though, is it?
I mean, this was posted on the Disney Parks blog, and it says earliest official candlelight photo from 1959.
Okay, then yeah, that's it.
So this is a Disney official picture. The colors are so vivid, and Main Street looks much like it does today. But if you look closely, you'll see like members of the choir are sporting various looks from the 50s.
That's crazy.
That's amazing. So I would go definitely go back to this day and see this massive choir. There are even little people on the sides carrying giant stars on sticks.
That's amazing. Oh, gosh. I think we gotta wrap this up, or do you have something?
Well, before we wrap things up, we've got a little bit of an announcement to make about upcoming episodes.
Yes, we do. I almost forgot.
For the holiday season. Yeah, do you want to take this?
So we dropped a little while ago that we were kind of planning something big, and this is actually something that Noah and I have been wanting to do since we started the podcast. And so what we're going to be doing is we've been kind of practicing with all these mouse gears leading up to Noah and I designing our own theme park from scratch.
That's right.
No bringing in like old Disney rides and redoing them. No, none of that. We are starting from the ground up, our own theme, our own everything, creating a whole theme park. Right now we're looking at three lands and a main walkway area. So it's going to be a four-part episode. So as far as like episode schedule, this is going to release week of Thanksgiving, but we're not going to record that week. We're going to take the time, spend it with some family.
Give thanks.
Yeah, give thanks. but then starting December 7th will be the first episode drop of that series. And then we will try to release two of them the week after, and then the third the week after that. So right before Christmas, we will have finished this series. And by the end of it, we will have an entire park designed by Main Street Mekkies.
Oh yeah, an original park, three lands, each land chocked full of goodies, which we will discuss in the first episode. So you will definitely want to tune in for that one. It's going to be interesting because we got bogged down a little by Vault of the Unseen, and we needed to rest after that one. So this time we're going to power through, and we are going to just give you great idea after great idea. It's going to be incredible.
Oh yeah. And so if you got any friends that have been like hemming and hawing about listening, or you know people that are Disney people, let them know that we're doing this. As far as I know, this is kind of something that Noah and I are doing. I haven't seen many other people try it out, so we're going to see how it goes. At minimum, it's going to be a ton of fun.
Yeah.
at maximum, we're going to have a really cool t-shirt by the end of this that we'll need to design. Hey. So tell your friends, tell anybody who's listening to the podcast that maybe misses this episode or anything like that, that one, they should listen to this episode, but two, that these episodes are coming up next and they are going to be crunchy and wonderful and afterwards and
spicy.
Oh, and spicy, and afterwards we're going to just like sleep it off is what we're
going to do.
And then
we'll take a break for Christmas. Yeah. But so look out for that, and then just thank you again for listening to this episode. These piece of Disney history episodes are a lot of fun for us to kind of just take a little research project and learn ourselves about Disney history, and hopefully you learned something as well, and this got you a little excited for the holidays approaching.
Yeah, I think everybody needs a holiday this year, I think definitely what we should focus on. So yeah, I can't thank everybody enough for listening and throwing that down. Remember, if you like what you hear and you want to tell us about it, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us get the podcast out there a little bit, and it helps us to know what you guys like as well. Like if you want to hear more piece of history episodes, if you want to hear more Mouse Geared Only episodes, if you like the episodes where we do a little bit more like personal stories, like let us know that. We'd love to hear your guys's input, but
feedback
delicious. Feedback is awesome. And so yeah, if you're liking what you hear, do that and tell your friends, let them know that we're a couple of young fellas trying to putting this together and having a blast doing it, and we'd love to bring you guys around. And if you leave a long enough review, I'll read it out in the Donald Duck voice, which is really bad.
It
would be fun to hear me try to do it.
If you want to hear a sample of that, you can listen to the end of our last episode that somehow snuck through all the filters. And
yeah, I thought that I was going to clip my way right out of that, and it would just be there. Unsalvageable, but nope, it's there.
Incredibly salvageable, but good or not, but yes. All right, well, thank you all so much for listening. We hope you have a great week and a magical day.
Ho, ho.
Oh, there it is. I thought you were missing it, and then you came around the back end.
It's Santa.